now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Okay, well, hey, happy Friday. Good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time, and any other time here, there, and in between. And each and every week, these broadcasts focus on quite simply the integration of spirituality and mental health, but there is so much more to it. And it's all placed within the context of ourselves and the relationships that we have with others and God and the divine. And more than just who are we when we look at ourselves in the mirror, but it's just, you know, what does it mean to be in healthy relationships with one another. I'm Dr. James Houck, and I'm again very happy to be here today. And if you would like more information about me, or you want me to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And these broadcasts are also podcast, in case you want to go back and listen again, or if you want to go back into the archives and listen to the previous shows, I invite you to do so, just so you can also access those shows through the website as well. Now, if you want to call in and be part of today's show, again, I invite you to do that, and you can just call the toll-free line, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I want you to give me your insights, your comments, your reflections, your thoughts, whatever, on today's subject. Who was that masked man? Authenticity in the days of COVID. Authenticity in the days of COVID. And this is part of what Reclaiming Authenticity does each and every week. You know, places these themes or these subjects within the context of this integration of our mental health and our spirituality. And for those of you who are new to the program, I just want to say just a little bit more about myself, that one of my firm beliefs is that we all come into this world fully equipped and graced with everything that we need in this life in terms of our skills or our talents, our giftedness, our strengths, our character traits, personalities, and so forth. And these things we don't often realize, or these are things, the very best parts of ourselves we don't trust, or these things that we come into the world with, maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may feel that we need to hide that giftedness about us or hide our skills. And, you know, you may be sitting there wondering, well, why would anybody want to do that if they realize that they're good at something? Why would they want to hide that? Why wouldn't they want to bring it out into the open and share with others? Well, think about it this way. How many times were you told growing up that you would never amount to anything, or, you know, there was nothing special to you? Or, you know, you made people uncomfortable because you started to act through your gifts and talents and strengths and character traits and so forth. And as a result of other people being nervous or not knowing how to take you, they started to shame you, or they started to lay a bunch of guilt on you. And that, depending on how old you were at the time, you may or may not have known how to handle that. And so you just said, well, I'm never going to show that again. I don't want to open myself up again to being humiliated or to being embarrassed. Or if more and more people are telling me that there's really nothing special to me, then maybe I should start to believe it too. And that's unfortunate, because when we have that within us, or let me say it this way, whenever we find ourselves wanting to push down our giftedness, our graces, our talents, our strengths, our uniqueness, we go through life functioning from that place of woundedness, and or a place of victimhood. And we're not authentic in our relationships because we're always defensive. And we're always looking to, you know, be on guard, because we never know when somebody's going to say something that, you know, they may not agree with. And we haven't quite learned to separate who we are from what we do or do not do. And so we kind of lump it all together and say, well, because I can't or because I won't, then that must in some way say something about me. And that is not simply the case. That is such a bogus message that comes from society. But far too many people believe that. But, just imagine if we reclaim those authentic places in ourselves, the very best parts of ourselves. We can approach relationships, the world, and how we interact and so forth from a place of healing and wholeness. And we can certainly embrace our uniqueness, our hachiatos. And when we're able to do this, we can certainly encourage others to embrace the uniqueness or their own hachiatos that's, you know, very special about them, and not look at it in terms of, you know, what somebody would intimidate us. But looking at it as these are places where we celebrate. We celebrate the giftedness of one another. We see how that uniqueness of one another is really meant to be a blessing for one another. And these relationships that we get into and are often hear these messages, they might just be within our own families. Or they might be, you know, people at work, our coworkers, and they might even be amongst our circle of friends. But again, you know, whenever we find that that transformation, and whenever we're able to embrace the uniqueness about ourselves, we can also transform others by our presence, our grace, and our understanding. And this is why I place reclaiming authenticity in relationships. Because we are relational people. And when we think about it, you know, it's kind of ironic that we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual wounds in and through relationships. However, we can also discover our greatest healing, strength, peace, forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. Okay? But first and foremost, you know, forgiveness, kindness, compassion begins with how we treat ourselves. Because certainly when we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can in turn be more compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving of ourselves, then we can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, then we discover how this really opens our hearts to see and to live in gratitude with others. Yeah. So, yes, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us, but it's also meant for the betterment of all. So how do we do this? You know, how do we begin? How do we live this out? How do we put this into practice? Well, that's what this show is all about in a nutshell, just helping you first and foremost kind of discover how to reclaim those things that which have always been in you. And that awareness is key, first and foremost, to understand that you are a gifted and graced individual. Loved with an everlasting love from God, one who knows us from the very beginning and knows us everything there is to know about us, and yet loves us unconditionally. And that's a powerful thing to wrap our heads and our hearts around. But when we allow it to really sink down in our hearts and our souls and really have it take root, it is transformative by, you know, absolutely. And we, in turn, love ourselves unconditionally. And then we are compelled to, well, then what do I need to do so that I can love others unconditionally? And what's getting in the way of that? What's stopping me, you know, from being able to do that, since it was shown to me and is being shown to me? Okay. Well, I hope all is well with you, and I hope your heart is doing well today. But if you are struggling in one form or another, I pray that you have and find rest. I pray that you find comfort, and I pray above all that peace would just gently reassure you that you are loved unconditionally. And if you're having a great day, absolutely, be sure to find a way to pass along that joy onto another person. Even something so simple as just that genuine smile can make all the difference in the world to another who is struggling to find acceptance, peace, and love in their life. Well, you've heard me say many times on this show that I am a big fan of Carl Rogers. He was, back in the day, a psychiatrist who found person-centered therapy. This was something that he developed, and, he didn't really have techniques per se, but Rogers was the technique. You know, he just really perfected his presence with others and just, you know, very much believed when he sat with others and counseled them that he really strove to be his authentic self. And then just what did that demand of him? And so one of the quotes that I thoroughly enjoy is just, again, how he places this authentic understanding in relationships. And he writes, "When the other person is hurting or confused, troubled, anxious, alienated, terrified, or when he or she is doubtful of their self-worth or uncertain as to identity, then understanding on our part is called for. The gentle and sensitive companionship of an empathic stance provides a much-needed illumination and healing. In such situations, deep understanding is, I believe, the most precious gift we can give to another." Okay, and certainly empathy. Empathy is something that can be conveyed, especially during times of COVID. Okay, and when you think about it, it's often the simplest things in our lives that mean so much to others. Whether it's a kind word or a smile or a gentle nod. I mean, these gestures mean so much and they cost nothing to share. I mean, it's like, what are you going to put, $5 on a smile? No, it just naturally comes. And, we don't know what's going on in another person. So to say, I don't really think that smile was worth, whatever. It's not a matter of worth. But it matters to the dignity, value, and worth of somebody else. So gestures, kind gestures, mean so much, and they cost nothing to share. Okay, and these life-giving behaviors that we cannot put a price tag on, they are indeed the very things that people desire the most in life and relationships. And speaking of a gentle smile, I mean, how many times this year have we been told that we should not forget to smile under our COVID-19 masks because others can tell that we are smiling just by looking at our eyes? And I'm sure if you're like me, you've searched in the internet to find just all the kind of, bougie face masks out there made from all different textures and so forth. Something that's going to keep the coronavirus at bay, but yet also has a certain style to it, a certain flash to it. But now we even have masks that, cover our face, our nose, but they're clear on the bottom. So for people who are hearing impaired, sound challenged, and they could read lips, and they can certainly see when a person is smiling. And this is something that I know classroom teachers have been exploring more and more. Because just a lot of times they talk all day to their students, and they just want to be clear as to what they're communicating as well as how they're communicating. So a gentle smile, or even just a deep, deep smile, goes a long, long ways. Now, we can certainly make eye contact with others and, smile under our masks. And, I've tried this in grocery stores. I've tried this in other stores. I've tried this at the gas station. Just done little experiments. Just people that I have never met. Just, wearing my mask and just giving them a big smile. Sometimes I say, "How you doing?" Or sometimes, "Morning." Or, a simple greeting. Sometimes I don't say anything at all, but I just smile. And you know what? When I make eye contact with that person, they smile back to me. It's almost giving them permission to, like, it's okay. You can be friendly. We can smile just by looking at each other's eyes. Okay? Now, our eyes indeed smile. And it's not just in the eyes, but it's also around the eyes that communicate to others that we're smiling at them. And I know the messages out there in society that there's all kinds of creams and ointments to get rid of laugh lines or crow's feet or whatever you want to call them. But I say, look, once you start with that stuff, you're going to have to keep it up. So, let the laugh lines come and the crow's feet or whatever you call them, because that tells me how you celebrate life. How you not only look at life, but how you smile, and where does that smile come from you on the inside? Okay. And these laugh lines, that's what's supposed to happen. Not just a matter of us getting old, but I mean, it's really the muscles around the eyes that are, that pull the skin. And, these muscles contract when we smile. And this is why our eyes soften and appear to narrow when we have a genuine smile. Now, some people's smiles are so large that they seem to disappear every time they do. And even science has gotten in on the act. Science has done incredible, incredible studies where they've looked at, how people smile and how often, how many times that they smile in a day. But they've also understood that again, it's not only the muscles around the eyes, but it's also, what happens during a very genuine smile. And so one of the things that they've noticed in with just a nonverbal communication is just around dinners. And one researcher, which is just a fascinating study, was how the eyes followed a certain pattern. In other words, whenever dinner guests smiled at each other, it was very inviting, and it helped one another relax and enjoy not only their meal, but also their company. And this article actually went one step further that, it also said that whenever we make contact with another person and we smile, we also increase our levels of oxytocin. Now, oxytocin and not Oxycontin, okay? Let's be clear on that. But oxytocin is also known as the love hormone. And it's associated with our emotional bonding and attachment. And it increases the more people gaze at the region of the eyes. And this is why when mothers and their newborns make eye contact, that bonding is right there. It is very, very powerful. And it's also crucial for establishing very healthy attachment behaviors. Well, there's a certain book out there. It's called The Moral Molecule. The Moral Molecule. And author Dr. Paul Zak, says that when the brain releases oxytocin, it actually creates what he calls a virtuous cycle. He says, oxytocin generates empathy, which in turn drives moral behavior, and in turn creates more trust, which then releases oxytocin, which generates more empathy, which in turn creates more trust, and so on and so on and so on. He says it's just a virtuous cycle. So whenever we make eye contact with another person, we smile at them, oxytocin is not only released in us, but it's also released in them. And this is why when empathy and compassion and friendliness, you know, when these things are modeled for others, you know, within kind words or behaviors, it's very catching. You know, people are inclined to want to do the same for others. And it's true. Kindness is contagious. Which brings us to the very heart of the matter today. And just as masks are very much a part of our lives, they are often portrayed in movies or other cultural expressions. It's just fascinating, you know, as a culture, how we get caught up with just wanting to wear masks. And, you know, maybe not the masks that cover our nose and mouth, but other masks as well that want to hide our identity. In The Tale of the Mask of the Red Death, it's from Edgar Allan Poe. Great story, by the way. Something to read, not just on Halloween, but anytime you find it. And several movies have been made about Poe's tale here. But he said that pretty much everybody in a certain town was invited to a grand masquerade ball. And the host of this ball was named Prospero. And Prospero was told in secret that in spite of everything you own and what you do, Prospero, death was going to visit you that night. And he was so unnerved by this that he spends the entire night trying to figure out his identity. You know, who is this, you know, the mask of the Red Death? Why is death showing up at my masquerade ball? And, you know, I won't give away the whole thing, but he's fooled in the end. The least likely character in the masquerade turns out to be. Okay? And maybe, you know, a movie that came out a long time ago, Jim Carrey, The Mask, and just a lot of fun, great comedy that it was, you know, with wearing the mask. And how about the Broadway musical Phantom of the Opera, where the Phantom was always seen wearing a mask and it aided him in his mystique and instilling fear into others. And perhaps you've gotten down to Mardi Gras and, you know, there's a lot of music, a lot of dancing. And of course, people are wearing masks and these masks just cover a person's, you know, upper part of their face. So you just want to hide their identity. And even in Chinese opera, you know, masks worn by performers really help the audience just instantaneously recognize, you know, who are the heroes, who are the villains, who are the allies, who are the foes, regardless of whatever scene is being played out at the time. Well, have you ever noticed that all masks have one thing in common? That no matter how elaborate or simple the design, they all force us to ask the question, maybe of ourselves, but certainly of somebody else, you know, who are you? Who am I? Who is this person behind the mask? And wearing a mask often adds a level of mystique to an event or to an experience. So sure, yeah, it's fun to put on masks to see how we look or to have others, you know, try and guess who we are. But I wonder what would happen if we became so comfortable wearing our mask that we decided to keep wearing it every day. Every day. You know, not only do masks have this question that pointed out to us as who am I or who are you, but also it raises this question, how do I want to be seen? I mean, that really changes things, doesn't it? Because it's one thing to hide your identity from others, to try and let them guess who you are, but it's quite another thing to actively project how you'd like to be seen by others, and then therefore treated accordingly. Well, imagine for a moment, and just play along at home here, imagine for a moment that you're holding in your hands a mask that projects to others how you would like to be seen. Okay, give you a second here. You got it? Do you have the shape? Do you have the color? Do you have the image? Okay, go ahead and metaphorically put it on. Okay, how does that feel? What qualities do you admire about the mask you're wearing? And what is it about this mask that frightens you a little or a lot? Now, once you have the answers to those two questions, you know, let's ask ourselves a third question. What do I fear the most that others will know about me if I take off this mask? Will they see my face? And if they do, what will I see? Will others just simply see my face, or perhaps maybe they'll see more? You know, will others know that when I wear this mask is really because I don't know who I am underneath, and so therefore it's just too risky to show myself to others? These are real questions, you know. But think about it. I mean, in a very true sense, we do wear a number of masks, metaphorically speaking, in any given day. You know, what about at work, you know, which dictates our behaviors? Okay. What about at home? What about when we're with friends? What about the masks we wear when we're with family members? Or shopping, or out in public in some other venue? Or do we put on a mask when we go to church or synagogue or a mosque? And what about a sporting event? Okay. And as much as we want to deny it, everybody wears a mask, and everybody wears different masks at different times. So who are we underneath our mask? You know, where do we begin this search for authenticity if we're constantly changing, swapping out masks and so forth? Well, the different kinds of masks people wear every day was something that really fascinated another psychiatrist, Carl Jung. And he was a contemporary of Freud, and they were buddies back in the day until they had a little falling out because, well, you know, it turned out to be a contest between the good old boys. And Jung really developed this concept of, people wearing masks, and he called it the persona. Now, according to Jung, a functioning persona is part of a person's soul. That means that the persona is connected to the core of the person. So, in a sense, in public, we present an exaggerated version of ourselves, which we hope will make an impression on others. And the character we display then in our jobs or our careers is really not the same, you know, character that we display at home. In fact, Jung even went so far as to say that this persona is more like a bridge to the outer world, because it's how we adapt in dealing with the world. And we may not like who we are or even know who we are, so we look to society to help define us and therefore help us find our place. And if that's there, it is to us, and, you know, as if, you know, that's all we're ever going to be, or that's, you know, all there is to us, I should say. And we run into a big problem once this happens, you know, because many times a certain kind of behavior is forced on people by society, and therefore people feel compelled to live up to these expectations, which is a no-win situation, you know. And if I can get real here for a second, it's certainly, you know, I see this time and time again with men. Men are told you have to act a certain way in society. You have to go around beating your chest and screaming at the top of your lungs and coming across as aggressive and hateful and, you know, intimidating. And it's like, that is not what masculinity is all about. The same thing is true with women. women are told that they have to be a certain way, or they have to, you know, have a certain kind of behavior, you know, in order to be successful or whatever. And, you know, that's not what femininity is either. So, I mean, as a result, I mean, people find that they cannot separate themselves from their persona or their favorite mask they wear, and they end up living their lives really not knowing themselves. And because people settle for an alternative version of themselves, they also take on, you know, a narrative or a story that goes along with wearing a certain mask. And, you know, I see this time and time again when I counsel others, and I always come back to the example of I had a client one time where he was a carpenter, and this was years and years ago, and he was highly skilled and very proud of his work. And when he introduced himself to me, he identified himself with his profession. He said, "Hey, I'm Roger. Nice to meet you. I'm a carpenter." And throughout our sessions, he would use various carpentry terminology, you know, whenever he would describe himself or whatever. He would say things like, "Well, I'm not sure, but I've always tried to measure my life against the plumb line of what was expected of me. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't pay to cut across the grain." And the more he talked about his life in carpenter language, the more I kept wondering if he knew anything else, let alone did he really know who he was. So one session, you know, we got on the subject. Don't ask me how, because I don't remember. It showed up where, you know, I just asked him, what would you like to be remembered for? And, you know, and what's the one thing that he would like others to know about him apart from his life as a carpenter? And he really didn't know how to answer that. He never asked that question about himself. And it took us a long time to work through that question, because Roger felt as if he would, you know, find his true self, whatever that looked like, he would be disappointing and betraying his family promises and vows of always working with his hands to put food on the table, which is a very noble profession. But discovering who we are is not the same thing as how we live that out on a daily basis. And oftentimes, society wants us to become more comfortable wearing their masks because we wouldn't want anybody to be comfortable with us, or uncomfortable with us, I should say. But does society really want us to be so authentic that we don't need a mask, metaphorically speaking? Well, hold that thought, because I really want to hear your heart on this matter. So again, if you want to call in today, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Before we get back into the show, I just want to say a quick word about next week's show. You know, Friday at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. That is going to be on Body Talk, what we think we manifest. Body talk, what we think, we manifest. Okay, so be sure to tune in next Friday afternoon and, you know, to listen to Reclaiming Authenticity. Okay, well, earlier in the show, or the first half of the show, I should say, that we were talking about various masks that we wear in life. And, you know, not only do these masks have this question of who I am, but also how do I want to be seen? You know, and that really changes things, because it's one thing to hide our identity from others and, you know, like, you know, who am I? You know, let them try to guess who we are. But it's quite another thing to actively project how we would like to be seen by others and then be treated, you know, accordingly. Well, as I said at the end of the first half, you know, as many times that society wants us to be more comfortable wearing masks because, you know, they don't want us, you know, to anybody else to be uncomfortable with us. And a lot of people buy into that, and a lot of people hide their authentic selves because, well, I don't want to offend. I don't want to make people nervous. And, you know, I don't want to be seen as coming across as, you know, bold or brass or, you know, just, you know, full of myself. And it has nothing to do with that, you know, because if you are truly authentic with yourself, truly authentic in your relationships, you're not going to come across as arrogant. You're going to come across filled with humility. You're going to be humble because you know where that authenticity comes from. And that's the part that's very attractive to others. See, you know, it's just something when we sit with this metaphor of the masks that we wear or the persona that Jung had talked about, you know, last century, I should say. Okay. But, you know, masks not only, you know, shield our identity from others, but also there might be times when, you know, we would want to wear a certain mask metaphorically to shield us from experiencing further pain in our life. Now, if you're old enough out there, you probably remember the old Simon and Garfunkel song that came out a long time ago, early 70s. Okay, so yeah, it's a long time ago. And it's entitled, I'm a Rock. And just listen to these words, listen to these lyrics, and just, you know, listen to the pain and how a person who adopts this kind of mask wants to be shielded from experiencing any further pain or disappointment in their life. It says, a winter's day. And a deep and dark December. I am alone, gazing from my window to the streets below on a freshly fallen silent shroud of snow. I've built walls. I've built a fortress steep and mighty that none may penetrate. And I have no need of friendship. Friendship causes pain. Its laughter and its loving I disdain. Don't talk of love. Well, I've heard the word before. It's sleeping in my memory, and I won't disturb its slumber. Of feelings that have died, if I have never loved, I never would have cried. I have my books and my poetry to protect me. I am shielded in my armor, hiding in my room, safe within my womb. I touch no one, and no one touches me. I am a rock. I am an island. And a rock feels no pain. And an island never cries. This is how it is for many people. You know, and again, it's one of these ironies in life that we often spend our lives, you know, metaphorically drinking poison, but we expect others to get sick. You know, nothing comes in, nothing goes out. But in order to find our authentic selves, in order to heal from this, we will need to release ourselves from these statements. I will never. And what breaks these statements, you know, is being honest with ourselves as we take off that mask that shields us from any and all psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounds. What masks have you worn throughout your life? Which ones are you comfortable with? You know, which ones would you like to be released from? It begins with releasing ourselves from these inner statements. I will never. What would happen if we became so comfortable wearing our masks that we decided to keep wearing it every day? You know, the danger is that we're so shielded from others and then from ourselves that we'll never get to a place of authenticity with ourselves, let alone in our relationships with others. I mean, that is a powerful song that Simon and Garfunkel came out with. But the words are still true today. And so is the pain that people experienced or have experienced. And it's being in relationships that have brought about that pain, unhealthy relationships. And a lot of people just say, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to place myself in those relationships anymore because I don't want to open myself up to that kind of pain, that kind of disappointment, that kind of frustration, that kind of misery. Because, yeah, let's be honest, I don't know what love is because I don't trust it. And they never realize that they could find all the positive things of the healing and the grace and the truth and the love by not only, you know, finding healing in themselves, but also finding healthier relationships. See, when we discover our authentic self and we start living as an authentic self, you know, on one hand, we assume then that our authenticity should shield us from any and all negative reactions from others. And this is to be expected at times because along with authenticity, there also comes this authentic energy. And this will create an effect in others. I mean, you talk about something that's catching, talk about something that attracts or draws others. You know, just like the way a kind smile or a gentle word will do that. I mean, some will be drawn to you when you find your authentic self and others will not. But regardless, when you no longer need an emotional, psychological, spiritual mask, your authentic self will no longer be affected by the opinions or reactions of others. And when others cannot affect your authentic self, well, it may not always go well for them because they might just choose to remain miserable when healing is staring at them, you know, face to face. I mean, I've seen this many times in, you know, just certainly family dynamics when one member of a family begins to change and others scramble to counterbalance the effect or they struggle to maintain the dysfunction that they grew accustomed to. You know, they may feel intimidated because what authenticity demands of them. They might be disappointed. They may feel betrayed or hurt or rejected. But yet, our fullest potential is waiting for us. And what gets in the way is, you know, our ego, our pride, our arrogance, unforgiveness, anger, rage, wounds, our unwillingness to forgive and to release these wounds, as well as to be released from deep-seated burdens or beliefs that are just very non-life-giving. We need to be released from guilt and shame imposed on us by society or a family, and even be released from family secrets that you vowed to carry. One of my favorite metaphors, I am a lover of trees. I love the forest. I love the woods. And you know, the oak tree is one of the strongest trees. Well, it's also one of the largest trees out there. And it starts off very, very small. It starts off with an acorn. And it's interesting, fascinating, really, when you study the life of an acorn. All you need to do is just put it in the ground. Nature will take over. And as the seed begins to sprout and the roots go down and anchor it firmly in the soil, and it pops up above the soil, and you leave it alone, it will grow into a huge, huge oak tree. Now, something's getting in the way of that. And, you know, some things hinder its growth. But if we consider this ourselves of we have everything we need, just like that acorn has everything that it needs to grow into a tall, strong oak, we have everything that we need so that we can claim our authentic selves and live accordingly. It's just a matter of getting things out of the way so that, again, that natural progression towards life can take over. Because perhaps we've said at some point in our lives that I will never trust another person, or I will never forgive that person. I mean, I've said those things too. And I realized that I just ended up cementing myself in a very cold casket of bitterness. So how do we release ourselves from these beliefs that no longer serve us? Well, we have to begin by perhaps understanding the origins of where these beliefs and perspectives came from in the first place. And despite our perceived differences, and if we look at others and we say, well, you know, we have differences in race and language, religion and culture, there is a common Native American expression that I come back to time and time again that really emphasizes this interconnectedness among all that we see. And it's Matakio Oyasin, all are related. And this phrase is understood by the Lakota Sioux people as an expression that extends to all of creation. It's not just person to person. I mean, it's everything, you know, humanity, animals, vegetation, minerals, elements, land, water, thunder, fire, wind, sun, moon, stars, etc. All are connected to one another and all affect one another. And for too long, I mean, humanity, we are guilty of this because we've been influenced by, well, what's in it for me kind of scenario. And as much as we've become enthralled by our gifts or our giftedness, we have to keep in mind that our talents, skills, and blessings, or knowledge and wisdom, they are not meant for us. They're not meant for us. These gifts are for the benefit of others. Okay? So reclaiming our authenticity compels us to ask, you know, now, how can I serve humanity? How can I alleviate suffering? How can I speak up for those who do not have a voice? Because really, this is what authenticity is all about. You know, some might even say that they're content with being who they are. Like, okay. But we all need to ask ourselves, am I being authentic today? Am I being honest and genuine in my relationships? You know, I still meet many a people who say, well, I'm going to wait till I'm retired, whenever that will be, whenever that will be, to do what I've always dreamed of doing. But yet, what are we waiting for? I mean, having all our bills paid? Having enough money in the bank? I mean, too many people, and maybe you've even said this to yourself, that I'll get around to it someday. And yet, the vulnerable and the wounded people are the ones in need now. Such hurting people need others to see in them their potential to live authentically, including the benefit of reclaiming authenticity. Perhaps people believe they have too much to lose to be authentic. You know, it's like, I can't afford to do that because that might just take me in a different direction, or that might just take me in a different area of my life, or I don't want to give up my job, or whatever it is. you know. Or maybe they, you know, they do not know or fear that people will accept them as they are. You know, perhaps they have a fear of being ridiculed or rejected, shamed, ostracized, shunned. You know, but again, the Native Americans have a saying passed down from ancient times. The strength of a tree comes not from growing thicker in the good years when there is water, but from staying alive in the bad, dry times. Okay. When in doubt, look to the acorn. And we all live in a time when, as we focus on the virtue of stewardship, the one gift that we really need to foster and treasure is the gift of ourself, our inner life, and our spirit of resiliency. But again, it's not for ourselves. These gifts are meant to help and be a blessing to somebody else. Now, there is great value in reclaiming our authenticity because we find that inner freedom and that strength and that peace and assurance of who we are without giving away our uniqueness, playing by somebody else's rules or definitions or expectations. And for some, you know, finding that inner strength to stand on their own two feet empowers them to reach out for better relationships or to be in a better job or even to pursue justice. I mean, indeed, those who are authentic often find God's greatest blessings. And I believe this is where the next great spiritual awakening is going to come from. People finding the strength to reclaim their authentic selves. There are people out there who have never heard of these concepts. I mean, let's be honest. You know, we live in a nation that we are very blessed to have the means that we have to and the media capability to talk to one another and to share ideas and so forth. But what about the people who are not blessed with such capabilities? Or what about people who, again, have been told one thing all their lives, and they have no idea that there are actually very good things in them, that the very best of those things have yet to come out? You know, they've been told, like, don't even bother looking, because if we can't see it in you, then nobody can, or it's just simply not there. And that's not true. That is just simply not true. There is, from a developmental psychologist standpoint, Eric Erickson, he did developmental stages in our lives. And one of the stages, which I see really brings it into focus, is a stage of people who are between 35 and 60, or maybe even a little bit older. But somewhere around there, sometime in between these ages, that generation has a tendency to look back over its shoulder, and it realizes that younger generations are up and coming. And it's interesting, you know, having conversations with people in this particular age group and how they feel about, you know, the youngins, as they put it, or the Gen Zers. I think that's what the generation that we're in right now, the Gen Zs. And, you know, how do you feel about them? Do you feel like they're going to be okay? Do you feel like they're going to make it? And a lot of times, you know, people, you know, depending on who you talk to, would say, nah, I don't really, you know, the kids these days, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and that all, again, stems from perhaps that's what they heard when they were growing up and they couldn't wait to get started. And, you know, these kids today and so forth. But imagine what it would be like if we're able to look back on the generations who are coming up after us, and we see that great potential in them, that we see them as authentic human beings with all the gifts and graces that they need, that they come to this world with. And imagine just how different the world would be if we could encourage them to, let's go find those things together. Let's go find the very best parts of yourself. And to be more supportive, to be authentic in our relationships with them. To say, I know you're not going to do it the same way that I did it, but that's okay. You will find your way because I have all the confidence in the world because you have everything you need. And plus the fact they're living in different times than, you know, the older generations were. You know, it's just every generation is shaped by certain sociological factors. However, just because we're shaped by certain sociological factors doesn't mean that's the end-all be-all to us either. So every older generation has the responsibility to reach back to the younger generations to not just pass on words of wisdom, you know, and talk about the good old days, but really encourage the younger generations to keep moving forward, to keep striving, to keep looking inward, to find the very best of themselves. Because the younger generations haven't seen anything yet. And neither have we. Because just when we think we've found our authentic selves and we've found the very best parts of ourselves, that compels us to then dig a little bit deeper. Because there's a lot more to us than what we have discovered so far. I see you. I hear you. I see the potential in you. And this is what the younger generations need to hear. This is what you and I need to hear. They crave it. They hunger for it. They need it. So let us continue to search for our authenticity and to reclaim the very best parts of ourselves that we came into the world with. It is a joy that's to be celebrated because the joy is not just like, hey, look what I found, but hey, look how I can now serve. You've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I've enjoyed this afternoon with you and invite you to tune in next Friday, 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time, when we're going to be taking a look and having a nice discussion on body language, how the body talks, and just the different ways of in which we create our authentic selves by what we think about ourselves. In the meantime, everybody take care, please be safe, and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to reclaimingauthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.